Welcome back to Tales of Southwest Michigan's Past. This is Michael Delaware. I am your host. Yes, I am opening again with Christmas music. It is the Christmas season, and during this time in December, I have tried to seek out stories from around the region that perhaps kindle some of that spirit in all of you. One of the fun ways to do that is to have guests on to talk about holiday memories as well as events that bring about this Christmas magic. Today, we're going to venture back over to Berrien County and speak with Rhiannon Cezanne from the Berrien County Historical Association, who has some very special Christmas memories from around the county that we're going to talk about, as well as some events to share that are happening this season. Welcome back to the show, Rhiannon. Hope you have a wonderful holiday season so far.
You know, the funny is when you're working on the back end of things, it's really a much more hectic season than you're expecting, because you're not just balancing your own personal Christmas, but you have to plan Christmas for all of your visitors that are coming through the museum as well. So
it is crazy.
Christmas since I think September. So really, I'm like in month four of Christmas.
I started in July planning the Christmas program that happens next week at the museum. So it's been a very hectic the last few weeks for me getting the final details together. So it's a lot of fun.
Oh, I'm sure. And you're doing a performance, which makes it even more detail-oriented than the other things that some of us are doing.
It's kind of a live storytelling performance. So, So could you introduce yourself to the audience for maybe those folks that missed some of the earlier interviews I did with you, and explain what your role is with the Berrien County Historical Association?
So my name is Rhiannon Cezanne. I am the executive director of the Berrien County Historical Association, and our job is to operate the History Center at Courthouse Square, which is one of seven county parks here in Berrien County that is stewarded by us. All of the collections that you see on display, those are ours, so it's a partnership with the county. And we are open year-round, Wednesday through Sunday, 10 to 5. And we have a host of programs, such as our own holiday stuff, which most of our holiday stuff has already passed. We got it done pretty early. But we will be hosting Michael in the future for an upcoming program. So hopefully we'll have
a chance to talk about that. We're still working out the dates on that, but I'll be announcing that on my calendar very soon. Now, one of the big memories that perhaps many people from Berrien County and probably all over Michigan and the United States probably remember is there was a very special Christmas movie that was filmed in Three Oaks, and that film has become kind of a holiday treasure. It's called Prancer. Can we talk a little bit about the history of the film Prancer?
Yeah, so for those of you who are not familiar, Prancer is a film that was released in 1989, starring Sam Shepard, Cloris Leachman, in her first film, and I think to date one of the only film titles that she has under her as an actress, Rebecca Harrell, as 8-year-old Jessica, who very much believes in Santa and the magic of Christmas. And she believes that Santa lost one of his reindeer and that the reindeer was in the woods behind her father's apple orchard. So she believes if she heals who she believes to be Prancer, then he can get back to North Pole. So it's about the adventures of Jessica trying to keep the Christmas magic alive, get this poor reindeer back to Santa, and get other people to believe in the power of Christmas magic. It's a very feel-good, very 80s film. Yeah. And the majority of the filming actually took place in Three Oaks, with additional filming done in LaPorte, Indiana, where director John Hancock is actually from. That's where he was raised and where the world premiere actually took place. And then there was a couple scenes that were filmed at Starved Rock State Park in Utica, Illinois.
Right.
I believe the scene where Prancer leaps off the cliff to go fly back to Santa. I think I just spoiled the movie for you, but you know, it's been over 30 years. If you weren't watching it then, you ain't going to watch it now. So
that's something to queue up on your Netflix for sure if it's out there this season.
If you're wanting to watch it, it's available for $1.99 rental on Amazon Prime. I did go look up to see if it was still available. And if you have AMC Plus, you can also watch it there. So the interesting thing is in the original film, it was supposed to have been set in Vermont. And they actually were looking in Vermont for filming locations leading up to leading up to kind of finalizing where they were going to go. And the director had familiarity with, you know, Northwest Indiana and Southwest Michigan. And for one reason or another, decided to make Michigan the location. And the town actually had its own name in the script, and they just decided to rename it Three Oaks. And so they came and they filmed for several months here in Michigan. And it was a big deal. I mean, Three Oaks was in a, like a lot of Southwest Michigan towns were kind of in a bit of a quandary, so to speak, mm-hmm. because economically we were kind of going through a bit of a downturn in terms of tourism. Three Oaks itself was kind of, they were losing businesses left and right, a lot of empty storefronts, they were losing population. And so the hope had been, and there were quotes from newspapers that we found from other newspapers, like the Galene Times have been quoted by the Herald Palladium as stating that they believe that this would be a good thing because they replaced the name of the town with Three Oaks. They do say Three Oaks, Michigan. Sam Shepard's character, which is Rebecca's father in the film, the daughter's name is Jessica. The hell's the dad's name? Anyway, we'll figure that out.
Wasn't it Sam Elliott, not Sam Shepard?
Sam Elliott. I'm sorry. Yeah, okay. He's saying Sam Shepard.
I kept thinking that it was Sam Elliott when I was remembering the film. And
yes, I am confusing Sam Shepard with Sam Elliott in my head. I am so sorry. You people are like, this woman doesn't know anything. How's she running?
No, it's totally fine. I do it all the time. Anyway, I'm terrible with actors.
They even wrote it in the script. You know, Sam's character even mentions Benton Harbor, right? Mm-hmm. And there was reports from the live, from the national, the world live premiere of the video, people came from Three Oaks and like, oh my gosh, like in the theater going, oh my God, they mentioned Benton Harbor. Oh my God, there's such a background. And so it was a really big thing. And it is not that Three Oaks will sit there and say that that was a catalyst for revitalization in Three Oaks, mm-hmm. but it gave them something to sell. Like we're a place where Hollywood came and filmed. And so the Three Oaks of 1989 looked way, way different than you see mm-hmm. it in 2023. So the revitalization of downtown, it certainly helped. And as someone who vacationed in the Harbor Country area during that time, it was a big deal even for us. Oh, we have to go see Prancer. I remember we bought the video when it came out on VHS and we watched it every year. And it was, we would have to watch it in Michigan. We were in New Buffalo, so mm-hmm. New Buffalo Lakeside. So it's like, oh, we got to watch Prancer. I have to admit, I don't particularly care one way or another about the film. Everyone else got really excited about it. So we all watch it every year and we just watched it. But it was very interesting because what ended up happening is a scaled down model of Three Oaks, the majority of their downtown area, was made by the De Laurentiis family was commissioned by the De Laurentiis family and given to the village as kind of a thank you gift for filming there. And that model is still visible on display every year at the Region of Three Oaks Museum.
Wow.
So if you want to see kind of what the downtown was kind of stylized for the movie, it was meant for aerial shots, but once filming was complete, they didn't know what to do with it. So Dino De Laurentiis, who is Giada De Laurentiis' father, you know, the chef, mm-hmm. he was one of the executive producers on the film originally, and then his daughter took over as EP or one of the EPs.
So they built a set. I thought they filmed with some of the backdrop of the existing old historic buildings there.
They did. So, okay. But what this is a scale model of what the village looked like in 1989.
I gotcha.
With decorations just as it was in the film. So if you've never seen the film, there is a scene where Jessica's going down Main Street. Mm-hmm. At one of the major intersections just past where Big C Lumber is right now. Uh-huh. And in the movie, there are workers that are hanging a blow mold version of Santa and his 8 reindeer to go across the intersection. And in the film, one of those blow molds falls off. And that's how Jessica thinks that, again, I'm not sure why she thought it was Prancer, but Jessica thinks that Santa lost one of the reindeers. And then a couple scenes later is when we see this lost injured reindeer in the woods.
Wow.
But in that model, they have a model of the blow mold strung across, you know, that intersection. And so I was able to find a little bit of information on it And that was, it was very interesting to find out that it was commissioned and built, and it was a landscaper out of La Porte that actually built it. And so he'd done a bunch of other scale models. I guess he apparently done a scale model of a Swedenborgian machine prior to that. So he was built to create this entire scale model. And for a long time, it was actually on display at the Bicycle Museum. And the article I saw, it was still on display. But in recent years, it's been at the Region of Three Oaks Museum. So it's kind of really neat to go and see kind of what it's a really interesting snapshot of what the downtown looked like outside of that film. Because obviously they decorated it to look, you know, weren't empty building fronts. Yeah. They, you know, put big, you know, buildings and stores in there. Mm-hmm. But it was a really neat, it's a really neat aerial view of Three Oaks and the downtown area. And obviously the businesses that were there are labeled appropriately and the fake businesses are labeled in there, but it's neat to see what you saw in the film.
Yeah, most definitely.
So, and I believe you'd have to check their website and their Facebook page, but the Region of Three Oaks Museum does have viewings this time of year. They get it mounted up in November, and it's huge. I mean, it takes like three people to carry this thing into the museum. And they're all like at a cockeyed angle to get it in the door. And so it's a really neat model, and people still talk about it. I don't see much reference to it today in a lot of parts of Berrien County, but Three Oaks still celebrates it, and they still try to make sure that the magic of the film, which is believing in the holiday magic, is still alive and well in Three Oaks.
Well, that's good. It's good. They should capture that. That's a, not every town gets an opportunity to have a major picture, especially one that special, you know. Mm-hmm. How about some reindeer facts? How about, did you know that all of Santa's reindeers have to be girls? Because the male reindeers lose their antlers like in September. So that was interesting facts I came across.
And that, and the reindeer, the name of the reindeer who played Prancer, was name was Boo, and it was a female.
Yeah, just like Boo Radley. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And did you know that she was pregnant, and they chose her because they knew her antlers would stay on longer because she was pregnant? That's kind of interesting.
See that, 'cause when I was refreshing my memory, I'm like, oh yeah, that's right.
That's kind of interesting that we learned a little bit at reindeer anatomy today on Tales of Christmas Past or Tales of Southwest Michigan's past here. So Berrien Springs also has a special event that concerns pickles. Can we go into, we got the Pickle Festival t-shirt drawn out here, folks. Tell us a little bit about this. I know that there's a Pickle Festival in the summer or something, right? But they have one at the holiday season that, or something that related to the holiday stuff.
So we need to go back. Picture it, Berrien Springs, 1992.
Right.
So Berrien Springs, again, let's go. We're going back to the early 90s in Southwest Michigan. Touristy places are seeing a little bit of a downturn. Not as many tourists, or maybe they're going further north or further south, or they're staying along the coast in like New Buffalo and St. Joe. So the inner communities are kind of seeing lesser people. We're starting to see some resorts and hotels start to close down, and tourism in general goes in waves. Sometimes it's affected by like recessions or economic concerns, and other times it's just people's interest. If you've ever watched the film Dirty Dancing, they even mention it towards the end of the film. Oh, kid, you know, it's set 1960, you know, 62 or 63. Mm-hmm. And they even says, you know, the kids want something different. They want to go on cruises. They want to go to Europe. Right. They don't want to come to, you know, the Catskills and stay in a resort with their parents. And that's how it happens. As generations begin, certain generations begin to age, and the new generations are coming in. They all have different interests, but then it cycles through, and we're in a high end cycle where tons and tons of tourists come into Southwest Michigan.
Right.
But Berrien Springs, like a lot of inner county cities and villages have, is people kind of don't get away from the coast. If you have never been in the inner part of Berrien County, please come see us. We're very, very beautiful, and you will love the smell of grapes as you drive through Berrien County in September as the grape vines are all ripening up.
Right.
So anyway, there was concern that we were losing out on, as a village, Berrien Springs was losing out on tourist dollars. And what few tourist dollars were out there, they were kind of sticking out to the coastline. And so they were kind of saying, maybe we'll do something come up. And then early in 1992, three members of the Berrien Springs Chamber, the Berrien Springs Eau Claire Chamber of Commerce, who included Dick Schinkel and Glenn Uminowitz, both of whom were with the BCHA at the time. Glenn was our then director and Dick was on the board of directors,
okay,
making the museum an OG partner and all of this.
Mm-hmm.
They had gone to them and one other guy had gone to a conference, some sort of conference for like tourism. And they were at this booth and they were somehow got introduced to the concept of the Christmas pickle. Now, okay, just for the record, the story goes that if you hang a pickle ornament in your tree, the first person to find it Christmas morning gets an extra present. Families may modify it. Maybe there's money involved. Maybe you get extra dessert.
Oh.
But the idea is that you hide this pickle ornament. And the legend is that it's a German tradition.
Okay.
Germans will tell you that Americans are liars and very crazy because they do not have a tradition like that.
Hmm.
And it's not. It is likely the pickle ornament story came from a very enterprising salesman at a big department store like Woolworth, an attempt to sell these ornaments that are probably not selling nearly as much as, say, something prettier like an apple or grapes, oranges. These are hand-blown glass ornaments from Germany, so that because they're German, that's where the story kind of evolved from. So they're told this story, and of course, we did have pickle-producing facilities around Berrien Springs, including one in Glendora, which is unincorporated, and then Flam's Pickles in Eau Claire produces like 5 million pounds of relish for big name companies every year.
I see.
So there is a history of pickles in the area. We do have German immigrants, so they thought it would be neat to build a whole Christmas festival around this pickle.
Right.
In addition to the uniqueness of the, you know, because we have like the great, there's like the Niles is Four Flags Apple Festival. There's Blueberry Fest up in South Haven.
There's like a peach festival too. I think it's the Glad Peach Festival,
right? Peach Festival in Sonoma.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's all these other festivals. Most of them are in the spring the summer or very early fall.
Okay.
And there's not much else going on in December. Most people are not really traveling in December like they are in the other time of the year.
Right.
So December was great because there was not much competition for other festivals.
Good idea.
It's tied to the holidays. People are always looking for something to do around the holidays that are very, feel good and family oriented. Number three, there was a potential, you did have technically the pickle connection. And number four, the uniqueness of pickles, because we are still asked today, why pickles? And there was a former director of the Pickle Festival from the late 90s who got asked that same question by someone in the Herald Palladium. And his response was, if it was anything else, do you think we would be talking? So the uniqueness really kind of stood out.
Right.
So in 1992, they held the first Christmas Pickle Festival very early in December to kick off the holiday season.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a parade and there was other things. And they had these pickle points that you could, these little coins that you could get to go shopping for special discounts in downtown businesses.
Mm-hmm.
We had some stuff at the courthouse and it was a hit.
Mm-hmm.
So it continued for several years under the Chamber of Commerce. And then eventually it became its own separate 501c3.
Wow.
It was very active through the 90s. We actually have, in our museum, have some pictures we found from 1994. And I was able to date the pictures because it had a picture of Miss USA in there eating pickles.
Uh-huh.
Miss Michigan USA eating pickles. And it turns out Miss Michigan USA was from Berrien Springs. So I'm like, how the heck did they get that title holder?
Wow.
It's from Berrien Springs. But then I asked who she was and people were able to date it from that. Anyway, so it continued. And then eventually we've not yet been able to figure this out. We've not found any paperwork yet telling us why.
Mm-hmm.
They decided to split it. So they still had Christmas pickle at Christmas time, but then they had like a summer version in July. And at first they held it at the, around the 4th. And then they dropped it later in the month because again, too much competition around
the
4th.
Right.
And it kept going and kept going. And they were seen between both festivals, thousands and thousands and thousands of people. There was one article we'd come across had indicated like 10,000 people would have come see the Christmas Pickle Festival.
Right.
And we've talked to people from Berrien Springs and like, we don't remember anything having like that many people. But given we just had 4,000 in the Revive Pickle Festival this past year,
mm-hmm.
now we're thinking, okay, maybe they did have 10,000 people at the height of the festival.
Yeah,
it
wouldn't surprise me at all. Yeah.
So it kept going until about the early 2000s. And a lot of there was a lot of internal things going on in the committee, and then people were kind of getting bored with the idea because it was the same thing. Not a lot. There was not enough, you know, occasionally new items to keep people. Mm-hmm. It fizzled out. After a couple of years, the village didn't want to go without something at Christmas because they had built up that audience and they didn't want to lose it.
Right.
So they came up with Kindle Your Christmas Spirit. So downtown, Berrien Springs on Ferry Street is all closed off. There's a bunch of stuff going on downtown. Mm-hmm. Ice carving, Santa, multiple performances, all sorts of stuff, crafts, vendors. And then It extends to us and the library on Cass Street because we're right next door to each other. And we do things like we have a hot cocoa bar. Some other places give out hot cocoa, but we have a hot cocoa bar, which is you buy your hot cocoa for $1.
Yeah.
And we've got like 6 or 7 toppings you can put on your hot cocoa. So, you know, you're getting a lot for your $1. We do have a blacksmith who comes out and makes sleigh bells in the forge. Mm-hmm. One of the local schools, Trinity Lutheran, comes and does their Christmas concert every year. And I had 2 vendors this year because I'm going to get my Christmas mart at the museum. I'm building towards it. But anyway, the point was, is that they wanted to build on that tradition. So they took the pickle away and it just became a general Christmas thing. And we still see quite a lot of people. I mean, we had about 500-600, maybe more last night. And the weather was good, so that helped.
Wow.
So it's a very fairly big event, but again, not quite as big as Pickle Festival because it's more for locals than it is,
right,
you know, this big thing to invite people in. But anyway, after Pickle Festival kind of passed away and went into the, you know, brine jar in the sky, mm-hmm, people kept talking about it. It was in Weird Michigan. I remember I started in 2019 in my current position, and I remember maybe a couple months after I started, someone goes, "So what's the Pickle Festival?" And I'm like, "What are you talking about?"
Right.
And I was like, "Why are we selling pickles, these pickle ornaments?" Like, "Oh, the Pickle Festival." I'm like, "What is the Pickle Festival?" Right. And of course, the people I was talking to didn't know because they were here after Pickle Festival had kerplunked.
Wow.
And so the village ended up hiring a coordinator to kind of handle these, you know, bring back some, you know, mm-hmm, expand the kind of programs and events in the village. And Kelly, I already knew from another job she had in the area. And so Kelly came into my office in 2020 and said, "The village wants to revive Pickle Festival. What do you think?" I said, "Well, we'd love to be a partner."
Yeah.
And we got the library involved. And so we revived it. We decided to make it a summer thing because mm-hmm, we already had Kindle. By this point, Kindle already been around a decade. It was well established. There was no point in trying to take over Kindle. So now we host Pickle Festival July 4th every year at the museum and the library grounds.
Okay.
And like I said, this year we did 2021, 22, 20. This is our third year doing. This was our third year, and we had 4,000 people show up. So
wow,
whatever we're doing is working. But
well, you
that's
know,
what I'm saying.
It's a really well branded concept. You know, it's got a little bit of quirkiness to it that makes it fun. You know, I mean, I'd rather go to a pickle festival than an apple festival. Apples are very common, you know, but pickles, you know, hey, no one's going to go see a pickle festival anywhere else, you know. It gives you a chance
and
to brand something very unique, you know. Yeah.
And we have better puns because, you know, yeah, like it's a big deal. You can relish your time with us,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, come tickle your pickle.
All puns you can't use. They're a little inappropriate.
Right.
But, you know, it's been a great time, and we're glad to be able to revive this thing. And we still sell the Christmas ornaments every year at the museum. Mm-hmm. And we have a couple different styles at different price points. So, like, we have an inexpensive $5 one. And in the past, we've had, like, you know, hand-blown glass versions for, like, $12.
Right.
So, we, you know, we change them out each year to see what people are interested in. And then those are the ones we kind of keep it. Mm-hmm. But we have, like, pickle-related stuff now. Pickles are my life. This is my legacy. I'm going to do all these wonderful things at the museum, but the Pickle Festival.
Oh my gosh! There's
legacy.
so many ways to spin that. That's great.
I know.
That's just great.
Great.
Well, let's move over to St. Joseph because you have a very special, unique Christmas lights program over there. That's kind of a draw now seasonally, right? Over in St. Joseph, Michigan.
Yeah. So that is referred to as Light Up the Bluff, and it's literally across the entire bluff there in St. Joe, from there right in front of the Crassel to right in front of the Whitcomb, is about 1 million lights in the form of either lights around trees or in the pine trees and, like, light
wow,
sculptures, so to speak. So, for example, the historic Maids of the Mist fountain that we have, because they shut it down in the winter to preserve it from not, you know, the pipes not bursting.
Exactly,
crazy.
Yeah.
They actually set up the lights in the fountain to look like the fountain's actually trickling water.
Okay.
You know, so it's very interesting. You got like skaters and Santa. And, the cool thing is they actually, it's very connected to Christmas, because they actually start light up the bluff usually the first Saturday in December. But they actually run all the way to Valentine's Day in February, because St. Joe does have some stuff in January and February, like their beer, their winter beer festival and the ice carving festival. So they leave it up until February. So there's plenty of time to see it, but it goes on pretty much at dusk and runs, I'm assuming, till midnight. I don't know. I don't go out at midnight anymore.
Right.
But there's information on St. Joe Today, as well as, of course, the City of St. Joe about the times. But they're available 7 days a week. So if you want to go down at 10 o'clock on, you know, a Tuesday evening to go see them, you're welcome to do so. And the really neat thing is you've got, like, South Bend Chocolate, like, right over there in Toasty's Cafe. And they sell hot cocoa. So go get yourself a hot cocoa and go walk the bluff. You can kind of see the lake in the background at night. You can see the lighthouse. It's a wonderful view. And it's a very nice walk. I actually was just walking there with a friend the other night.
So the bluff, when we're talking about the bluff, that's like the Silver Beach area, right?
It's looking over Silver Beach.
Okay.
So if you are on State Street in downtown St. Joe and go one block over to Lake Street, that's where the bluff is at. And then you can look down, and during the day when the sun's out, you can see the Centennial Dial and the water fountain.
So is it better to walk on down to the Silver Beach and then look back to see all the lights? Is that normally?
I think you could do either. I think it'd be, you know, being down there at Silver Beach and you just see all these light up shapes across the bluff is a really, really interesting thing. But also there's that magic of walking and walking among the lights.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes you're like, oh, look, someone's missing the light. I mean, and they maintain it very, very well. There was actually just an article here not too long ago that it came out that the City of St. Joe budgets about $20,000 a year for new parts, new bulbs, new wiring. So they can go a year or two and then some, you know, bulbs go out, so they have to replace a bulb, or something gets damaged. You know, dog chews on something, so they can replace it. So it's a very beautiful thing. And the really neat thing is it's because they kind of run most of the heaviest part of the winter for Southwest Michigan. It's 56 degrees outside right now. So there's really no snow.
Right.
The magic of winter is kind of not there. But come January and February, when you do start seeing snow happening and it's getting down to 30 degrees or cooler regularly, and you got snow on the ground, even during the day, it's kind of magical, because you kind of see these twinkling lights out of the corner of your eye. But then you come at night and that light reflects off the snow and you just feel like you're walking through a light tunnel. And it's just this wonderful feeling. So yeah, they've been almost like 15 years since they started doing this. So it's been around a while, and it's become a tradition for a lot of families, and they do the lighting and tons of people show up, and it's a great time.
That's great. Great. Are there any special open houses that you should mention that are coming up after, maybe, because this episode will air on the 12th of December. So anytime after the 12th, between there and Christmas, like an open houses downtown, maybe at the museum or other places around.
Most of our stuff is done for the season, but if you want to come out and enjoy the grounds and our brand new sidewalks, we're very excited. Mm-hmm. You can now safely walk the grounds.
Yeah.
The one thing that didn't pop up that I would recommend is heading down to Niles to see Floating Santa. Last year celebrated 60 years of this like barge in the middle, the St. Joe River. And there's a Santa in there. And, it's probably one of I would probably say of all of the traditions we've talked about tonight, it is probably one of the longest lasting. I mean, it's 60 years they've been doing it. So that would put it, 1962, I think, would have been the first year.
Okay.
And so what they do is they have it lit up. Now, they're decorated downtown for Christmas, and Niles does, you know, the Chapin Mansion was decorated for the holidays. Most of the decorations are gone. because after their open house at the beginning of the year,
right,
some of the decorators take their stuff back. The Chapin Mansion still has decorations with the Niles History Center. Mm-hmm. Call ahead, because sometimes the Chapin Mansion is closed. So make sure you call ahead to make sure the Chapin Mansion is open.
Okay.
But anyway, they do. Then you can walk downtown and see all the decorations. And you can go over to the river. And there is this barge with a Santa on it and a Christmas tree. And it is fully lit up at night. So if you go, if you ask anybody, when you think of Christmas at in Niles, what do you think of? Everyone will tell you, all the old timers, all the long time livers will tell you, it is Santa on the barge in the middle of the St. Joe River.
That's great. That's just great. Wow.
So if you Google it, there's actually videos of it kind of floating along the river.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a concern that it would not have been lit in 2020 because of COVID, but they were able to get it done and get it in.
That's just great. And I love these unique holiday displays that communities come up with on their own, and they become a tradition, and it's just something that is unique to them, and it becomes a draw for tourism and people that are going through the area. They're going to want to go check out Santa on the barge, and also the lights on the bluff, and go get their own pickle ornament before Santa gets there this year. Get on over to the Berrien County Historical Association and get yourself a pickle ornament. Got to have one of them.
Well, as much as I probably killed that story for a lot of people mentioning it, it's not a German story. It's not. It's distinctively. And the thing is the guy who came up with that was also a double smart salesman. He didn't just sell that ornament. He probably sold other stuff easily because. Well, we got to get an extra special present for the pickle ornament, right? So you end up buying more stuff, right? You make more money. But, from a perspective of having a family tradition, it's a fun thing. It's a fairly inexpensive thing to do. You're not investing in this complex, decorations or whatever. You just stick the ornament on the tree. Now, if you're not Christian or you don't celebrate Christmas, you still could do it. You could just hide the pickle somewhere.
Yeah.
Hang it off the menorah or whatever.
Well, that's how traditions start. Somebody has to start it, so might as well grab it from a salesman's imagination. That's not a bad idea.
Exactly. Pickles are for everyone.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you're allergic to cucumbers or brine, but they're for everyone. So don't think that, that the Christmas that this is just a Christmas ornament. It is an ornament, but it's definitely for everyone. And we have them for $5 in the gift shop, so come get them.
Right, and I bet they even have reindeer ornaments over in Three Oaks if you go looking for them. I would venture to guess
sure
they probably got them, man. If not, they need to get them. They need to get them out there because that'd be like...
If not, then I will get the reindeer ornaments.
That's right. Make a tour.
Now you're giving me ideas, Michael.
Make a tour of Berrien County. You guys start a tour and you get an ornament in every place. You get a reindeer ornament over in Three Oaks and a reindeer ornament over in... where the pickle festival is held.
Let me plug the, I believe it's the Niles Junior League. Let me look that up. The Junior League does ornaments every year. And they've been doing this for years and years. And they come up with the Service League. It's the Service League. And each year they come up with a different style ornament. It's actually resin. It's very, very sturdy. And they pick like anywhere between 3 and 5 things to feature. So like we were in 2013, we were one of the featured locations.
Okay.
Last year they did like the Niles Scream Park. Mm-hmm. They've done the Four Flags Festival, Ferry School, which was one of the first black schools in the area.
Right.
All black schools in Berrien County. They've done, landmarks, the Chapin Mansion, they've done all sorts of different things. In fact, they're quite collector's items because once the year is over, unless somebody's got a whole, a whole bunch of them available for sale somewhere else, they're kind of gone. You can actually see previous years on display at the Niles Library.
That's neat.
Near the rotunda. And then the Service League, if you are interested, reach out to them. I don't know what their 2023 is, but they had 5 last year. And they don't always, like I said, it's not always necessarily in Niles. They did, in 2022, they did Buchanan High School in honor of their 100th anniversary.
Wow.
Meaning that high school's been in use since it was first opened in 1922. So they featured it that year. So sometimes it's a historic anniversary, like, you know, someone having, like a 75th anniversary of a business might be there. So
nice. That's a neat, that's a neat tradition.
If you look them up, you can find them. There's, it is. And it's a really neat tradition to see what people thought, you know, built. Some of those buildings are gone.
Mm-hmm.
Some of those events don't exist anymore. Right. So it's really interesting for those super old ones to see what was around and what they thought was important. So the Niles Service League, not the Junior League, the Service League. Look them up online, and they might have ornaments still for sale.
Great. All right. Well, how can more people find out about the Berrien County Historical Association if they wanted to come out and do a tour or more information? Can you tell us about their website there? And
yeah, so our website's berrienhistory.org, and if you are wanting to see what programs, exhibits we have going on, like our current exhibit right now is An Acre of Our Own, the Jewish Farmers of Berrien County. That runs through December 23rd, 2 o'clock. We close at 2 o'clock for the holiday, and then we're closed until next year.
Okay.
We are our much-earned break, I'll tell you that. So you can go to our website, berrienhistory.org. Go under Plan Your Visit, and you'll see the drop-down menu. So you can look at our programs page. You can look at our... Now, keep in mind, our programs page has just been updated for pretty much everything in 2024 except the December events, which are still showing current events. So you can actually start planning for your 2024 visit.
Mm-hmm.
Follow us on Facebook, the History Center at Courthouse Square, or the History Center on Instagram. Do not ask me how we got lucky with that one, but we did.
Good for you.
The History Center on Instagram. Give us a call at 269-471-1202. And if you're interested in having us come to us for a tour or us come to you for a lecture, you can find that information online under tours and talks. We actually do have 7 topics that we can choose from that, or that you can choose from. Have us come talk about everything from a murder mystery. Well, that's, it's not really a murder. We know who did it. a true crime story, a murder story, all the way to the history of Clark Equipment Company. If you ask me to do the Masons one, the Freemasons, please have somebody in there who can answer all the conspiracy theory questions I know I'm going to get, because it's not fair that I have to answer them all by myself. An hour of my life gone on just those questions. And then there is a fee. But again, all the fees that we charge go back into the operation of the museum to ensure we're able to meet our mission. And, you know, if you're outside of Berrien County, we're happy to come to you. And we're welcome to have you come to our organization. There may be a bigger fee for any travel of our staff because you are out of county. But we still love our Southwest Michigan neighbors, and we love participating and joining up with other programs and events. And then if you think you'd be interested in participating in an event, we always have ways you can sign up online to make it easier. And of course, you know, check us out. We're like I said, Mike will be joining us in May of 2024 for probably one of the most unique programs we've ever put on.
Right.
Which is a wine tasting, a flight of wine.
Wine. And murder mystery, or murder. Well, not really a mystery, but yeah. It's a murder story that happened in Cass County, but the trial played out in Berrien, and the guy who was killed was from Berrien, and it was right near the county line. So it was just a very interesting story.
So he'll be joining us for 5 stories of his new book, which if you've not pre-ordered, please do so, unless you want to wait and buy it from us, because we'll be carrying it. Anyway, we're pairing 5 wines with 5 stories from Michael's new book at Lazy Ballerina Winery in May. Details are already on our website, and more information and registration will begin.
Looking forward to it. It's going to be a lot of fun.
If you want to hear us talk about it and you miss others, come see us. We'll be happy to have you.
Great. Well, I have been speaking with Rhiannon Sisson from the Berrien County Historical Association, and she is the director over there, and it's a lot of wonderful holiday stuff happening in Berrien County, things that you can do and memories that you can share. And definitely go watch you're probably going to want to go watch the Prancer movie. You almost have to do it now that you've heard the story, you know. It's just a tradition.
I may have actually spoiled it for you, but there's still a lot more to the story. You got to figure out how they get to the end.
There's a good magical part of it. It's definitely a wonderful one to remember. And I'm going to probably queue it up myself one day this weekend and watch it just because. And so it's a lot of fun. It's always a pleasure having you on. If you guys would like to reach out to me, you can find me at michaeldelaware.com. I will put the link to the website for the Berrien County Historical Association in the show note description, so you can find that. And as always, if you enjoyed today's episode, please be sure to leave a review or a rating on whatever app that you are using on, and share the program with others so we can pick up more listeners in the coming year and the coming season. And we'll definitely have Rhiannon back on next year, because it'll be a lot of fun to talk about other events that are coming up in Berrien County. And she is always a hoot to have on here telling us all kinds of stories. So quite a pleasure to have you back on. Hope you guys have a wonderful holiday, wonderful Merry Christmas out there. And and don't forget to get your tickets for Tales of Christmas Past if you want to come see me. I will be performing on the 16th, coming up here very soon, with Dave Eddy, Bobby Mathis, Donna Rickman, and Brian and Jill McCombs at the Battle Creek Regional History Museum, 307 West Jackson Street. There are still tickets available for the evening performance. I believe we may be sold out on the matinee, but I will put the link in the show note description as well, along with everything else. Until next time, we'll be taking another journey into yesterday, and we explore even more fascinating tales of Southwest Michigan's past. Thank you for listening.